Now, this afternoon, we're going to talk about money. Okay. Now, let's understand something about tithes and offerings. Okay. And also, we can put in there, we'll see if we can get to eating out on the Sabbath. And if there's room on the chip, we'll do so. If not, I'll cover it at a later date. Okay. Let's keep the perspective the way we need to, which is also what Paul did, as we will see later. Okay. Let's come to Luke 11 and verse 37. Luke 11 and verse 37. Okay, Luke tells us here, Luke 11, verse 37. Okay, verse 37. Now, while he was speaking, a certain Pharisee asked him to dine with him, and he went in and sat down. But the Pharisee, seeing this, wondered why he did not first wash before dinner. So Jesus was not politically and religiously correct. I like this session here, you know. And he didn't speak glowing words to the Pharisees. Now notice how he talked to them. Then the Lord said to him, "Now you Pharisees cleanse the outside of the cup and the dish, but inside you're full of greediness and wickedness. Fools!" And they thought they were the intellectual elite of their day, see. "Did not he who made the outside also make the inside? Rather give alms from the things that are within." In other words, whatever you do must come motivated within from a clean heart. Okay? Because you're not going to bribe God. God is pleased when we choose to do the things that please him. So keep that in mind. "Rather give alms of the things that are within, and behold, all things are clean to you. Woe to you Pharisees." Now that's pretty heavy. You go back and read all the places in the Bible where it talks about woes, and especially the book of Revelation, it's really hell, damnation, and destruction. "For you pay tithes of mint and rue and every herb, but you pass over the judgment and the love of God." See, if whatever you do is not for the love of God, then you're missing the whole point. That's what happened with the Pharisees there. "Now, it's obligatory for you to do these things. We should do them and not set aside those lesser things." See, because you do a major commandment does not necessarily mean you ignore the minor commandments. Or you can't take the minor commandments and blow them way up and ignore the major commandments. And we covered that this morning, loving God first, loving your neighbor, loving the brethren. Okay? So this is telling us that they should do the right thing. Now, let's ask a couple of other questions concerning our age. First of all, Daniel tells us what? Everything's closed and sealed to the time of the end. All right? What else did he say?
The wise will understand.
No, that's later. That's correct. We can't miss out in between. Many shall go to and fro. And boy, that's what it is today. It's been about 100 years. I know I sat there at the airport waiting to get on the plane. It's full of people down in Orlando, coming and going, coming and going, coming and going, coming and going. What am I doing? Coming and going, coming and going. See? "And knowledge shall increase." And I look around, what do I see? Everybody working on their cell phones and iPads. And I get on the plane. And I sit down next to a man who has an iPad. And he's got this thing on. He's going, doo-doo-doo-doo, boop-boop, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo, boop-boop. And I watched him, you know, doing that. And I couldn't figure out what he was doing. So, and he did it most of the flight. Of course, he turned it off when we took off. So as we were landing, I said, well, how do you like your iPad? He says, oh, I love it. He says, it quite hasn't replaced my laptop, but it's really great. And I said, does it weigh as much as a laptop? He said, no, here, feel it. So he let me hold it. And it was this thick. I mean, I would say half inch thick. That was it. And he said, the new one's even lighter and thinner. And I'm thinking, whoa, is Fred Flintstone way behind? Yeah, man. See, when I'm on a computer, I'm only doing word processing. So my word processor is 12 years old. So that's my computer. That's what I work with. So you watch the kids doing their thing. You watch everyone doing their thing. Knowledge will increase and come to you quickly. We can add two. All right. Number one, that tells us God understood what this society would be like, right? Yes, indeed. What did Jesus say? As it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be in the days of the coming of the Son of Man, right? He knew what it would be like. And I also think that God is responsible for letting a lot of this technology, revealing it to men. He knows they're going to use it for good and evil, but it can also be used for preaching the gospel. And so Tim came up here between services, and he had his iPhone. There he was, watching me on Church at Home. Right there. Well, let's ask a question. If the Apostle Paul had access to airplanes for his travel, do you suppose he would use them? I believe so. If he had access to recording material and sending it like we do today, and pretty soon the post office is going to be obsolete, would he use it? Don't you think he could get his message a whole lot quicker to the churches of Galatia if he had digital recorder and an iPhone to send it? It could get there the day he wrote it, instantly. And he can title, I could just see the title of it on an iPad. Oh, foolish Galatians! Hey. And then he could send pictures of the group he was with when he was writing it, because he said, all the brethren with me. Okay? Now today we live in an age that sometimes it is more difficult to understand how some of the prophecies apply. But nevertheless, this is true. Let's come to Matthew the 4th chapter. Matthew the 4th chapter. And it ties right in with what we're talking about to begin with. Okay? And oh, by the way, we can pinpoint the day his ministry began. The Day of Atonement in 26 AD was the beginning also of a Jubilee year. That'll be coming out in a new book sometime this summer. Okay? So here he was tempted. 40 days and 40 nights in verse 3. When the tempter came to him, he said, if you are the Son of God, command that these stones become bread. He could do that, no problem. But if he did it, who would he be obeying? God or Satan? Satan. So notice his answer. But he answered and said, it is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. Well, how do we do that today? Are living in the age that we live in today, what do we do with electric lights? We turn them on or off, right? What did they do before electricity? Well, they had candles or they had a lantern, okay? And that's what they used all down through the centuries until electricity, except now they think that the Egyptians probably had access to electricity too, because you can't see in those caves without some kind of light, or the, not the caves, but the pyramids. And who would want to go to Egypt to look at all those dead men? They're still dead, you know? Okay. And one thing, I don't want to go to Egypt. I don't want to go to Jerusalem either. Jesus said, those without, don't go in. Those in, skidoo, get out of here. Okay? All right. So, it gets into how we keep the Sabbath, and it also gets into something else. It gets into how do we tithe? When you have a completely agricultural country, and in Israel, when God formed it, he put cities of Levites within every tribe, and for the purpose of serving and teaching the people in their tribal areas, and also so they could bring their tithes to the Levites, and then the Levites would send up a tithe of a tithe of a heave offering up to Jerusalem for the priests. Okay? When you had mostly an agriculture society, what was it that they brought? Tithe of the corn, or tithe of the barley, tithe of the wheat, the first of the first fruits, all of that would be brought to the local Levites in their tribe. Then the heave offering would go up to Jerusalem. Well, what happens, because God knew that there would be this age we're living in today, where we are not mostly agriculture, but we are mostly metropolitan. That is, city livers. City livers. Not livers from here, but those who live in cities. Okay. Got to have a little fun once in a while on it. So how are we to obey? Let's come to a principle here. In Romans 7, we are to live by every word of God. All right? Romans 7. Now, we know in the new covenant, because everybody's old covenant, new covenant, all of that, that is true. But how are we to obey today, which was also a requirement for them in their day, although it was in the letter of the law? Romans 7. Now, I'm not going to go through and explain the whole of what Paul is talking about here. In the second edition of the Bible, we have Paul's difficult scriptures to understand. You can go through and read it there. Okay. Let's pick it up here, verse 6. Now, we have been released from the law. Now, that's the marriage covenant law between Israel and God. That doesn't mean the law has been dismissed and abolished. Because if there is no law, there is no sin. And if there is no sin, you don't need a Savior. Okay? Because we have died to that in which we were held. How did they die? He's not writing to dead people. How do we die? We die the death of baptism. That's correct. See? Okay? In that which we were held, so that we might serve in newness of spirit and not in the oldness of the letter. Well, that's how we're to serve, in newness of spirit. A spiritual covenant, now spiritual obedience. And we will see how then is it handled with tithes and offerings, because some people become almost apoplectic when they hear the word tithe. And today, it is more difficult because of inflation. Now, let me find the page here. Page 1288. I'm not asking you to turn there, but I'm telling you what we have there. We have the beginning of the beliefs, and a little further in, we have a section, Christian financial responsibility. So I'm not going to go through everything that is written there. So if you have other questions, you can read it. Let's go on from here, and we will see how we're going to cover this today. Now then, he asks the question. He says, verse 7, Romans 7, okay, verse 7, Romans 7, what then shall we say? Is the law sin? May it never be. The Greek there is me genoito, meaning don't even let this thought come into your mind. Okay? But I had not known sin except through the law. Furthermore, I had not been conscious of lust except that the law said, you shall not covet. But sin, having grasped an opportunity by the commandment worked out within me, every kind of lust, because apart from law, sin was dead. For I was once alive without law, but after the commandment came, sin revived and I died. In baptism. In other words, he began to see sin was not just what you do on the outside, but sin, he saw, was on the inside. And therefore, he had to be baptized and be forgiven his sins, and he died to death in baptism. Okay? So we are to obey in the Spirit. Let's also see something here that's very important to understand. Let's come to Matthew 22. Matthew 22. By the time of Jesus' ministry, they were more of a metropolitan community than an agricultural community. And also, another thing happened. When the Romans came in and conquered the land, they took the land in ownership of it themselves, and they would let the owner, former owners, work as tenants. So much of what they produced went to the empire to keep it going. They also had, at that time, money. Silver and gold coins, copper coins. So here in Matthew 22, we see a confrontation with the disciples of the Pharisee and some of the Herodians. Verse 16, Matthew 22. And this is something that applies today. And they went to their... verse 15, then the Pharisees went and took counsel how they might entrap him in his speech. And they sent their disciples along with the Herodians to him, saying, Master, we know that you are true, and that you teach the way of God in truth, and that you're not concerned about pleasing anyone, for you do not respect the persons of men. Therefore, tell us, what do you think? Is it lawful to give tribute to Caesar or not? Now, I don't think they had a constitution like we have, much of what we have in the way of the money system is not constitutional. But look what happens to everyone who resists. Just like it was in the Roman Empire. You pay, or you pay. Either the money, or time in jail. Either way, you're going to pay. So Jesus presented this answer to them. Verse 18, but Jesus, knowing that their wickedness, said, why do you tempt me, you hypocrites? Show me the tribute coin. And they brought to him a silver coin, and he said to them, whose image and inscription is on this? And they said to him, Caesar's. And he said to them, render then the things of Caesar to Caesar, and the things of God to God. Now he's talking about money. There are some things that belong to God that are not money. But let's ask a question. If tithing was only imposed upon those who grew crops or livestock, and they alone had to pay tithes, would God be fair? Because God is fair and just. Okay? Well, I don't think he would be if he did it that way. Let's see some of the things of God's that we find explained to us. Let's come here to Luke 21. Let's see that it also involved money. And I think it's interesting because some people will go through and say, well, I don't see anything here in the New Testament where it shows that you got to keep paying, that you got to pay tithes. Well, we have two places we've already read. Number one, where we covered that Jesus said, you're not to neglect the tithing, but you have neglected judgment and law. So tithing is not as important as loving God and judging, but it is still required. See? Now here in Luke 21, let's see what Jesus observed and the lesson that he taught. And it involved money. Luke 21. When he looked up, he saw the rich men tossing their offerings into the treasury. Now this was money. Okay, so people say, well, in the New Testament, we're only supposed to give offerings. Okay, how much are you to give? Well, probably more than 10%. All right, is that what you do? Okay, let's see what we have here. Then he also saw a certain poor woman drop in two small coins. And he said, of a truth I tell you, this poor widow has put in more than all of them. For these have given from their abundance, these have from their abundance cast into the offerings of God, but she out of her poverty put in all the livelihood that she had. Not everything that she had the rest of her life, but everything she had probably that day. And so that's how God views our attitude toward it. Now, what then would be the spiritual obedience to this? All right, we'll find out. We will look and see. Now, let's come to Hebrews, the 7th chapter, and let's see about situation with Abraham and Melchizedek. All right, Hebrews 7. Now, I've given two sermons on it that you'll get here pretty quickly, so I won't go through the whole thing. We'll cover some of the key verses here that are important for us to understand. And as we're going through here, let's realize that God also has understood from the beginning that since he's chosen men to do his work of teaching people, then he makes sure that they have a living. And he makes sure that there are the things necessary to accomplish what needs to be done. Okay, now it's talking here about Abraham, who met Melchizedek after the battle and brought him 10% of the spoil. Now, some people believe that Melchizedek was Shem, but he had a genealogy. Melchizedek, verse 3 says, without father, without mother, without genealogy, having neither beginning days nor end of life, but having been made like the Son of God, remains a priest forever. Now we know that was the one who became Jesus Christ. Verse 4, but consider how great this one was, to whom even the patriarch Abraham gave a tenth of the spoils. For on the one hand, those from among the sons of Levi who received the priesthood are commanded by the law to collect tithes from the people, that is, from their brethren, even though they are all descended from Abraham. But on the other hand, he who was not descended from them received tithes from Abraham and blessed him who had the promises. Now it is beyond all doubt that the inferior is blessed by the superior. For in the one case, men who die receive tithes, but in the other case, he received tithes of whom it is witnessed that he lives forever. Now, verse 9 is a very interesting verse. I want you to think about this. And in one sense, Levi, who received tithes, receives tithes, also gave tithes through Abraham. Now, that shows you how important that it is to God that he would draw this analogy. Okay? The reason being, verse 10, for he was still in his forefather's loins when Melchizedek made him. How about that? Now, this was done before Levi was even conceived. Therefore, perfection was indeed possible through the Levitical priesthood, for the law that the people had received was based on it. What further need was there for another priest to arise according to the order of Melchizedek and not to be named after the order of Aaron? For since the priesthood has changed, it is obligatory that a change of the law also take place. Did the whole covenant change? Yes. From physical and letter in the law to spiritual and obeying in the spirit. But are there still those that God uses to serve the people? And how then do people who receive all of their physical blessings from God, how do they show honor to God for what he has given to them through his creation? By giving of their substance that God has given them. So there had to be a change in the whole law. Old covenant to new covenant. All the priestly laws having to do with the sacrifices were all replaced by a higher spiritual standard. Tithing and offering, since we're dealing in money, as we covered back here with Jesus and the things of Caesar to the things of God, and the widow and the giving her two mites, and the rich men giving of their abundance. We see that things still must be carried on in the realm of financial responsibility. All right. Now let's look at how Paul handled it. Because this becomes important, and this becomes, along with this chapter, Hebrews 7 and 1 Corinthians 9. So let's turn there. 1 Corinthians 9. This becomes the authority to collect tithes and offerings. Now, as you will see when you read about Christian financial responsibility in the beliefs section there, that appendices, you will see that God never asks for something you do not have. However, the example of the widow giving her two mites is an excellent example of what we need to do when we have no increase from our labor. If you receive a paycheck, that's an increase for your labor, is it not? You work, you're paid. You don't work, you don't get paid. You're retired, you receive some retirement, but most people are not receiving retirements that are the result solely of their own labor. So they should have some kind of offering that they would give, depending upon what their heart is. And we will see all of that here in 1 Corinthians, the 9th chapter. Let's pick it up here in verse 1. Am I not an apostle? Am I not free? Have I not seen Jesus Christ our Lord? And are you not my work in the Lord? If I'm not an apostle to others, without a doubt I am to you, for you are the certification of my apostleship in the Lord. My defense to those who examine me is this. Now, why was he being examined? We will see. He didn't take a dime from them because he didn't want to take it from them because there were too many false apostles coming along who were collecting the tithes that should have gone to Paul. Now we'll see how he explains this, because this chapter carries a lot of understanding in it. Okay. Verse 4. Do we not have a right to eat and to drink? Do we not have a right to take with us a sister, a wife, as also the other apostles and the brothers of the Lord and Cephas? Or only I and Barnabas, do we not have the right to refrain from working? Does anyone at any time serve as a soldier at his own expense? Does anyone plant a vineyard and not eat the fruit of it? Or does anyone shepherd a flock and not eat the meat and drink the milk from the flock? I am saying these things to you merely from a human point of view. Or does not the law say the same things? For it is written in the law of Moses, you shall not muzzle the ox that is treading out the corn. Is it because God is concerned for the oxen? Now in India, there was one man who read this in the Bible, and he had this real skinny oxen that was treading the corn, treading the, pulling around the grindstone is what it was. And they weren't feeding it. So he read this, and he fed the cow, and it did more work and did better when it was fed. See? Now, what I want you to do when we see Paul's answer to this and how he interprets it. Now, I want you to see that this is quite an interpretation. So I'm glad he has it written. Okay? Verse 9. For it is written in the law of Moses, you shall not muzzle the ox that is treading out the corn. Is it because God is concerned for the oxen, or does he not certainly say this for our sakes? Reaching clear back into that part of the Old Testament and saying, this is meant for us. For our sakes it was written so that the one who plows might plow in hope, and the one who threshes the corn in hope might be partaker of his hope. Now, is the church likened to a field? Yes. Matthew 13 and Mark 4. Okay? Now notice what he says here. Here's his conclusion. If we have sown to you spiritual things, is it any great thing if we shall reap your physical things? Which then includes whatever agricultural products may have been, whatever monetary system they had, because it wasn't a Roman Empire and they had a monetary system. Now notice what he says in verse 12. If others participate in this authority over you, much more surely should not we. See, he was waiting for them, by seeing him work, to volunteer and choose to give tithes and offerings. He determined he was not going to take from them, but he took from other churches. And we'll see a little later what he said about that. Verse 12, if others participate in this authority over you, much more surely should not we. Nevertheless, we use not this authority, but we have endured all things so that we might not hinder the gospel of Christ. Now notice what he says next. Verse 13. Don't you know that those who are laboring in the sacred things of the temple live by the things of the temple? And those who are ministering at the altar are partakers of the altar. Now, what did they receive? What did the priests receive? The Levites in their local cities received the tithe there. They sent up a tithe of the tithe to the priest at the temple. That was tithes. That's what they received. The altar, there were certain portions of the animal sacrifices that they could have. And then there was the bread offering and the other things that they had, but it's all part of the temple and the altar. Now, what do we make of this verse for those people who say there should not be any tithes and offering? And generally speaking, those who say that should not tithe, they don't. Even though they may profess, well, we should give more than a tenth. Never happens. I won't say never. Rarely. Rarely happens. Okay? So here he is saying, others were using this authority so the authority could be used, and he says he could, but he didn't. So it puts it into the realm that Christ said, okay? Make the inside clean, and then the outside will be clean. Do the judgment in love, and then take care of the tithing and the offering, see? It's exactly the same thing here. Now notice verse 14. I don't see how you can get away from this. In the same way also, the Lord did command that those who preach the gospel are to live of the gospel. So that means the from tithes and offerings of the brethren to the ministry. Now, just like those who give the tithes and offerings have to be faithful to God, those who receive them have to be faithful to God and use the monies to do the things that should be done in preaching the gospel and serving the brethren. See? Just like the meal that we had here today. That comes from the income that comes into the church to serve the brethren. Okay? And God has blessed us in that endeavor wherever we go, and we do so. I remember one man said, well, haven't we given enough tithes and offerings that the church could buy the meal for us? And I said, yeah, that's right. Why not? So that's how we got started. God has blessed it all, every time we do. Okay? But there it is. In the same way also, the Lord did command that those who preach the gospel are to live of the gospel. But I have not used any of these things. And I have not written these things in order that this might now be done to me. For it would be better for me to die rather than to have anyone make my boasting void. For though I preach the gospel, there is no reason for me to boast, because an obligation has been laid upon me, and woe to me if I do not preach the gospel. For if I do this willingly, I have a reward. But if I do it against my will, I've been entrusted with a ministry. What then is my reward? That in preaching the gospel, I may make the gospel of Christ without expense, so that I may not abuse my authority in the gospel. So he's showing he had the full authority to do so, but he didn't do it. For although I am not under bondage to anyone, I have made myself a servant to all, so that I might gain the more. All right, let's go on from here. Let's see what he says about this. Let's come here to 2 Corinthians 11. Let's see what happened, because the church at Corinth was giving their tithes to the false apostles. I wonder how many of them were ex-Levites. You know. Okay. Let's pick it up here in verse 5. 2 Corinthians 11 and verse 5. But I consider myself in no way inferior to those highly exalted so-called apostles. That's the meaning of it, see. Because he's talking about false apostles here. 2 Corinthians 11, now verse 6. For though I may be unpolished in speech, yet I am not in knowledge, for in all things I have demonstrated this to you. Now, did I commit sin in humbling myself so that you might be exalted because I preached the gospel of God to you freely? I robbed other churches, so they sent more, receiving wages from them for ministering to them. Now that's something, isn't it? Now I receive a wage from the tithes that come in. Tithes come into the church to do the things that we need to do that God wants us to do. Just like Paul, I receive a wage. Okay? And when I was present with you and in need, I was not a burden to anyone, for the brethren who came from Macedonia fully supplied my needs, for I kept myself and will continue to keep myself from being burdensome to you in anything. So now he was really laying it on to them. All right, come over here to chapter 12. Let's see what he says here. Let's pick it up in verse 10. For this reason, I take pleasure in weakness, because God said his grace would be sufficient, in insults, in necessities, in persecutions, in distresses for Christ. For when I am weak, then I am strong. I have become a fool in this boasting. You have forced me to. He didn't want to boast about all those things. When I ought to have been commended by you. For in no way was I inferior to those highly exalted so-called apostles, even if I am nothing. Indeed, the signs of an apostle were demonstrated by me in all patience, in signs and wonders and miracles among you. For in what way was it that you were inferior to other churches, except that I myself did not burden you? Now notice the next sentence. Burden, burdensome, has to do with exercising the authority of collecting tithes and offerings. Forgive me this wrong. It's the same principle we have in welfare today. When everybody receives everything free, what do? It destroys them and they take it for granted, right? Now look at the state that we're in. To say nothing of having neglected God. So I think that's pretty important here. What Paul said, he said, forgive me this wrong. Now, we don't have 3 Corinthians, so we can't find out what they did, if they did anything, see? Okay? Now, we'll cover a couple of other things after we take another break here. So let's take a pause and we'll be back.